Milkshake!
What we've got here is failure to communicate.
This is Remember That Film, the show which covers a look back on memories, nostalgia, and behind-the-scenes facts that you may not have known about your favourite films.
Hello and welcome to Remember That Film here on 2MCE. You're with Adam through till 3 o'clock. This afternoon, and this week it is time for 90s and 2000s. I guess that decade's called the noughties or the zeros or the 2000s, I like to just call it. But we're going back to the mid-90s, yeah, and one of those big years of movies it was back in 1994 of a little movie called Speed. Pop quiz, hot shot. You got a screenplay with a ridiculous premise, written by a sitcom staff writer, a first-time director with a lot of ideas about how to execute it, a lead actor with no track record at all for opening this type of summer movie, and a supporting cast filled with mostly, well, unrecognisable faces. What do you do? What do you do? Well, if you're 20th Century Fox, you greenlight the project with a $30 million budget. Cross your fingers and hope for the best. The fact that Speed is as good as it is, it's sort of shocking. But what's even more surprising is the number of times a major studio relented to the whims of a relatively untested filmmaker and left him alone with the film he wanted to make. It didn't start out that way. The film was originally set out for Paramount Pictures and they offered it to Die Hard director John McTiernan. After all, when you are dealing with a script that is commonly referred to as Die Hard on a Bus, it's an obvious choice, but too obvious, it turns out. McTiernan understandably thought he had already made that movie. Instead, he suggested his cinematographer from Die Hard and The Hunt from Red October, Jean Dabont. Dabont was confident he was the man for the job. The studio said, no McTiernan, no deal. So Dabont and screenwriter Graham Yost brought it to Fox instead. They were more lenient to working with a first-time director, but they had one condition. They needed to be more action scenes other than those taking place on a bus. Dabont came up with the opening sequence on the elevator. Yost wrote the ending in the subway, and Fox gave him the green light. Dabont's first choice as Jack was Stephen Baldwin, but like McTiernan, he found the role too similar to Die Hard. And when he passed, the studio had their wish list for more obvious choices. But Jamong had seen Keanu Reeves in Point Break and was intrigued by the action vulnerability. Jabont would explain he's not threatening to a man because he's not that bulky and he looks great for women. But Reeves didn't think of the script on the role. After echoing a lot of the same criticism, it was clear to see if the new writer had a fresh take on this. Jabont selected Josh Whedon. Yeah, that guy, the Josh Whedon now who writes all the DC stuff. These were known as the days where he was a reliable script doctor, a somewhat thankless but although well-paying job that resulting in a share of the work but none of the credit. And although Whedon left the structure of the script intact, he rewrote all of the film's dialogue, resulting in some dramatic shifts and characterizations. Reeves had input as well, and that is how the character of Jack shifted from being a hotshot maverick to more of an earnest guy trying to do the right thing. Reeves may have been fully on board at this point, but the studio had its concerns about his bankability. To that, they insisted they offset his wrist. They cast a more well-known star in the form of Annie. Jabont refused, and he fought for Sandra Bullock instead, who at the time was an unknown and only had been in Demolition Man, starring with Sylvester Stallone the year previously. Okay, but what about the passengers on the bus then? Surely they can include some more recognisable faces there. Nope, that's gonna not happen either. Even Dennis Hopper's involvement had more to do with a last-minute script change than finding a name to put on the poster. And like what we were saying before, a lot of battle throughout production, and Fox really does have to be given some credit here for the faith and trust they put into the project, which was handsomely rewarded, of course, even before home video was factored in. Speed's worldwide gross 10 times its budget. It won over the critics too. The majority all agree, while it did come across as certain action movie cliches, the thing it got right in the movie was made up for them. As Peter Travers once put it in his review for the Rolling Stone magazine, it's a reminder of a movie escapism. It can still stir us, and it's dished out with this kind of dazzle. So it may have eclipsed similar Die Hard retrans, but with the time of its release, how well does Speed work too? And a half decades later. We're going to get into that today and some behind the scenes and what else was happening in 1994.
All right, gentlemen, what we have here are 13 passengers in an express elevator. Bomber wants $3 million or he blows the emergency brake.
This ain't a bus stop.
No, man.
Give it to your buddy.
Okay.
There is a bomb on this bus.
Pop quiz, hotshot.
Once the bus goes 50 miles an hour, the bomb is on. If it drops below 50, it blows up. What do you do? There are rules, Jack. I want you to get this right. No one goes off the bus.
An explosion.
You try to take any passengers off the bus, I will detonate.
That's our scumbag!
Do they think I'm doing this for fun?
See, I'm in charge here. I dropped this thing.
Freeze!
You have a hair trigger aimed at your head. What do you do?
It's just hanging on.
Made to explode.
Ah, yes, Speed. Back in 1994, they knew how to make trailers in the 80s and 90s. And normally this is when I talk about the memories I look back on Speed. And mine was an interesting one because I didn't see this at the movies at all. I think Dad and my sister had watched it the night before because I was at that age, you know, 12 years old or 13 years old, where all I did was watch action movies to start with before I really got into film. And I don't know what I was. I must have been busy that night or something. And I didn't watch it with them, which was crazy because they knew I was into that sort of movies. And they said, oh, you've got to watch this. So they had rented out the Speed VHS, and I think that next morning I got up really early, like 7 o'clock or 8 o'clock in the morning, while everyone else was still sleeping in bed. It might even have been earlier. I was the only one getting up. Put the VHS in, had the volume on quite little so they didn't wake anyone up, and I was enthralled watching Speed all the way through, and my eyes were glued to the TV the entire time while watching Speed. So that's the first time I watched Speed. Then I ended up owning it on VHS and then DVD and now the Blu-ray for it as well. And yeah, Keanu Reeves, he had a haircut like me back then, because back then in the 90s I used to get the Clippers, the number two all over. And Keanu Reeves had that before that. You know, Point Break, he had the long hair as he does now with the John Wick stuff. And yeah, he's get the number two, the same haircut as me. I remember looking, oh yeah, he's got the same haircut as me, Keanu Reeves. That was the 90s fashion thing to get your head shaved in that sort of way. But Keanu Reeves, yes, his acting skills are bland, let's say the least. He can't really act, but he's a great action star, you know, and he's doing stuff like video games and like Cyberpunk. But yeah, with speed, stuff like Cons, they were just Cons. Yeah, you great Keanu Reevesisms, the way he can pronounce things and all that. I'm an FBI agent. We had only seen him in Point Blank with the Patrick Swayze in that. But we're going to play some of the score music from Speed as well, which is really good stuff because it's just perfect for that. And there is a song on there, the end credits, Billy Idol. We'll have that as well in this hour. But Mark Messina did the score music for Speed there, and the perfect score music for such a speedy movie. You're on 2MCE, remember that film.
day is it? The date? What year?
What movies were released on the week and year that it was at the box office?
You know, it's June 10, 1994. This movie, Speed, came out. I guess June, July, August, you know, it's the big blockbuster time for movies. We're going to June 10, 1994. What movies were out? And this is going to be interesting, some of these as well. So we had Sugar Hill, Philadelphia. I thought Philadelphia came out a few years before that, Tom Hanks. I thought it was a year before, but that was still from 93, yeah. And Schindler's List, that was still left over there from 93 as well. Black Checks, Four Weddings and a Funeral, one of the first movies ever that got played uncensored on free-to-air TV in Australia because the language had to be part of it. And then since then, they sort of didn't worry too much. The Crow at number nine. See, 1994 was a great year for movies. And The Crow, of course, we all know the story about Brandon Lee, who was tragically killed on set with a gun that actually had real bullets, not blanks, in it. And they had to film the rest of it in CGI. Thankfully, they had filmed like 90% of that movie. They had to CGI the rest to fix that movie with Brandon Lee, you know, the son of Bruce Lee, who he tragically on film went into a coma and died as well. So they reckon the family was a little cursed there. But The Crow was a great movie. And I still see Heath Ledger took a lot of the aspects out of Brandon Lee and that for the Joker as well. Then we have When a Man Loves a Woman. That was coming in at number eight. The Cowboy Way at seven. The Beverly Hills Cop 3. I don't think I've ever seen the third one. I've seen the first one's a classic. The second one I may have seen once, and I never really bothered about that. Then we have Renaissance Man at number 5, Maverick at 4. Now, these next two films, they thought that Speed wasn't going to clash with them. City Slickers 2, they thought that would be the big one that would top the box office this weekend. And this one here, The Flintstones. Yeah, I saw that at the movies in 94. I was 12 years old, I guess. I thought The Flintstones would be great. What a disappointment that movie is. Oh, dear, The Flintstones. And they did make a second one as well. Yeah, not a good movie, The Flintstones. And number one, of course, Speed was hitting it and beat those two movies that they thought were going to be at the box office that weekend. Speed climbing in at number one. Let's go to that track now from Speed. And, of course, it's the title called Speed by the punk rocker Billy Idol.
Let's be on speed, the wheels on wheels. Experience more of 2MCE.
Let's now get behind the scenes.
Jim Blossoms, and we heard Soul Deep before that, before we get behind the scenes. Yes, that was on the soundtrack as well. There was about three or four songs in the actual soundtrack go along with the movie score. We heard Billy Idol, well, that was played on the end credits. So just a kind of a couple of songs that were played during the movie, which you may not know about. All right, we go to behind the scenes now. And Keanu Reeves breaking the glass on the bus door in the beginning of the movie was an accident. However, it was left in the final cut. A Fox producer realised they might have a hit on their hands when they noticed that during the test screenings, audience members would walk backwards when they needed to go to the bathroom, so they would miss only as little as possible. Sandra Bullock actually learnt to drive a bus to the film, passing her first test on the first attempt. The screen in which Annie Sandra Bullock takes a chewing gum out of the mouth and presents it to the other seat in order to have an excuse to change seats and moves away from the obnoxious Stevens was improvised by Bullock. The bus scene was not in the original script. Director came up with the idea one day when he was driving around Los Angeles and noticed one section of the I-15 freeway missing. So then they added in the jump scene, bus scene. The bus jump scene was done twice as the bus landed too smoothly the first time. The bridge was actually there but erased digitally. They could probably do even better now these days. There was an instance where a schoolboy saved the lives of a school bus full of kids when the driver had a heart attack by climbing on the driver's lap, jumping on the brake pedal and pulling the bus to the side of the road. When asked later why he did it, he told them that he had seen that bus movie. At halftime during an NFL game, there was a ceremony hailing the boy as a hero. Keanu Reeves did approximately 90% of his own stunts. I believe he still does two for John Wick. John Wick 4 being filmed now, actually. So we should see that sometime next year. The film literally ran out of money before it was completed. When the film was first previewed for an audience, the subway scene with animated storyboards. The audience loved them so much, the studio came up with the funds to shoot the scenes properly. Keanu Reeves and Jeff Daniels trained with the real SWAT personnel to perform their movements. I didn't even mention Jeff Daniels too. Of course, he was in this movie, and most people know him recently for they did three seasons of The Newsroom. That's an Aaron Sorkin one, the writer of West Wing. Three seasons of The Newsroom, and ended it, about five or so years ago. It was a really good series as well. Went for three seasons. Rennie Harlan and Quentin Tarantino were offered the chance to direct, but turned it down. Tarantino later named the film as one of his 20 favourite films since 1992. Dennis Hopper, because he didn't want a typical villain role, the director, he was cast. Yeah, he wanted Payne to be a regular guy who just snapped one day. And Dennis Hopper, funny enough, a year earlier was in that Mario Brothers movie. Yeah, the less said about that, the better. The watch Jack wears is a Casio G-Shock DW5600C. It had been discontinued by the time the filming started. The company had to start making them again due to the film's success, bringing about new demand. And you like that money there for that watch company. Josh Whedon rewrote the script uncredited. According to Josh Yost, the credited writer, Whedon wrote most of its dialogue. Quite incredible now, Josh Whedon, the work he does now, trying to fix a lot of the DC scripts that are a mess. 10 buses were used in the making of the film. Each one had two steering wheels, one for Sandra Bullock, the other for the stunt driver, which was more than often not on the roof of the bus. So Keanu Reeves was, we already covered that. For the bus jump sequence, a ramp was built. The bus was started from and about 1 mile back and accelerated towards the ramp. By the time it hit the ramp, it had reached a speed of 61 miles per hour. It travelled 109 feet and the front wheel reached its altitude of 20 feet off the ground, which was higher than anyone had anticipated. Because of this, the cameras were not placed correctly and the top front bus of the bus goes out of the frame when the bus reaches the maximum point of the jump. Look out for that one when you rewatch the movie again. The script was pitched to Paramount Studios, which placed the movie in a turnaround. They suggested to Graham Yost that the script, which called for the movie to end after everyone gets off the bus, had too much bus in it, implying that the audience would not go for a movie in which a bus is driving around for 2 hours. Yost then added the subway scenes and a modified script was presented to 20th Century Fox, which agreed to film the movie. Yeah, I must say that movie feels like it does end right there when the bus blows up and all the passengers are safely off, the majority of them are. So they add that little bit there to end the movie because you forget, oh, hang on, Dennis Hopper's still out there. The special bus was used for the bus jump scene. The bus was modified so that it could reach a speed of 70 miles per hour and it was equipped with powerful shock absorbers. The driver's seat was moved back 15 feet, so it somewhat went wrong. The driver wasn't ejected from the bus. The seat itself was a suspension mechanism between the ceiling and the bus floor to prevent the driver from suffering spinal compression on impact. Quite amazing. They wouldn't do this until 2021. 20th Century Fox executives weren't convinced that Keanu Reeves had enough star clout to front the film, insisting a big-name actress should star alongside him. But the director refused. Fox relented to his casting of Sandra Bullock with Reeves only 2 weeks before shooting began. Yeah, as I said, Sandra Bullock started off in Demolition Man with her first sort of action movie. It's amazing, you know, she started out doing action movies, Sandra Bullock, before she did a lot of those the chick flicks she mainly does now, you know, Miss Confidentiality and The Proposal and all those sort of stuff. But she did win an Oscar for The Blind Side, which was the true story about Michael Orr. I watched the NFL. He was an NFL player. Ended up actually winning a Super Bowl for Baltimore when he was drafted. But Sandra Bullock is a really good actor too, and I liked her action stuff. She was suited for that sort of stuff. She does a lot of comedy now as well, some action comedy. I think The Heat, that one with Melissa McCarthy. So, yeah, she does a bit now, Sandra Bullock. The film was released 1 week before the O.J. Simpson led a Los Angeles police on a chase in his white Bronco after he was suspected of murder. After the Bronco chase, many audiences who saw the film in theatres noticed how closely scenes from the film resembled the real-life Bronco chase, including media coverage and aerial shots of Los Angeles freeways. Yeah, I didn't think of that until I read that now. The O.J. thing did happen in 94. The shot of the bus entering LAX while in the plane takes off behind it took more than 50 takes. All right, we're going to leave it right there and go back to some score music so I can take a breath and a breather. And here we go. We'll be right back. You're on Remember That Film right here on 2MCE. We're getting close to the end now. De Bond came up with the idea for the opening elevator sequence while working as a cinematographer on Die Hard. While riding an elevator in the building, used the skyscraper in that film. The elevator got stuck in the fourth floor and they had to climb out to escape the hatch and jump onto another elevator to get out. The subway train that comes crashing up onto Hollywood Boulevard at the ending was actually a bus decked out to look like a subway train. The producers paid the owner of Payne's house $5,000 to blow it up. They also rebuilt it for them after filming. Hey, that's a good idea. I like that. You get $5,000 and rebuild a brand new house. Someone asked me if you want to do that. The Los Angeles airport would not allow any explosions to take place to avoid frightening travelers. The explosion scene that takes place while the bus collides with the airport was filmed in Mojo, California. Remember, this is pre-September 11 as well. Jack's sidekick, Harry, was originally to be played by Ed Harris. And in the version, it was going to be revealed as the Mad Bomber. However, when Harris opted out and Jeff Daniels signed on, the producers felt that the audience would not accept a sudden twist in character. So Harry was kept as a good guy throughout and the Mad Bomber written as a separate character. The idea of the hero's friend and sidekick being the villain was later used in Broken Arrow, also written by Graham Yost. That's the John Travolta and Christian Slater movie where you didn't know who the good or the bad guy was until midway through that movie. I could see that sort of coming, and that was probably in the original script as well, but I like the idea. Dennis Hopper is a better villain. The plane destroyed in the exploding bus has the logo Pacific Courier freight on its side, the same name on the truck used by the terrorists in Die Hard. It's an in-joke by producer-designer Jackson D. Govia. He was a cinematographer in Die Hard as well. According to Josh Whedon, the character of Stevens, Alan Ruck, was originally written as an abrasive lawyer who gets his combatants in an unexpected death scene. Whedon rewrote him as a sympathetic, dull-witted tourist of the final version, but kept the death scene, intending to give it more emotional impact. His character change was kept, but the death was written out, and the character was kept alive. So we only had the one death of one passenger, I think, in that film as well. The deleted scene sees Jack shooting Howard Payne in the neck just after he shot his partner in the leg at the beginning of the film. Later in the film, you can see the oval scar on Payne's neck caused by the shooting. I wasn't aware of that one. The scene where the bus smashes into the empty Boeing 707 being across the runway was actually filmed on the Mojave Airport on the DVD commentary. And, it was stated that it was out in the desert on an old runway. All trains have what it's sometimes known as dead man's switch that would automatically slow the train down to stop, provide the driver either stop tapping a certain button within a set time frame or release their grip with trigger type mechanism whilst operating the vehicle. The shots fired at the train driver's cab obviously causes the emergency brake to fail, but the scene can then be inferred as justifying while the dead man's switch system failed to deactivate the slow down and stop procedure. Yeah, that one doesn't make too much sense there. Then there's a body count of 13 in the final movie as well. When the bombers talk to Jack on the phone, he says that he has X amount for minutes. Jack looks at his watch in the alarm mode, not in regular mode. The subway car that comes crashing out of the tunnel was actually a bus dressed up to look like a subway car. And there is lots of more we can go through as well, but we are running out of time. You're on Remember That Film. This is 2MCE.